All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucking ears? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. How's it going out there? How'd everybody do? I don't know. General question. How'd everybody do? I did okay this morning. Did you do okay this morning? How far into the day are you? What's going on? Oh, my God. There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff. A lot of things are breaking down in me, in my body. My eyes are fucked up. That's for another day. Not bad. Just keep, you know, I mean, every year, a little worse. Everything's a little worse on the physical side. But, you know, that's the gift. That's the gift of continuing to live. You can just watch things in your body slowly break down. How's it going? Good morning. Yeah, that's where I'm at. Look, today, a couple of interesting things today. Well, first of all, I'm going to talk to Dustin Chafin. He's a comedian who I literally have known for, wow, I don't know. It's got to be 25 years. I haven't talked to him, I don't think, in 20 years. And he was around when I was in New York. I'm guessing, got to be 2000s, early 2000s. He used to run a room. I think he was roommates. We talk about it, but I think he was roommates with Bargatze. He tours with Bargatze now. But back in the day, he had sort of a gimmick going. And I think he's over it. But we talk about it. He texted me out of nowhere. And he's like, can we talk? And I'm like, yeah, man. Yeah. You can go to DustinChafin.com to see his tour dates. I'm just glad he's still around. He's coming up. Now, the other thing that we're going to do today is kind of interesting. Now, a lot of you know me. I'm not challenging myself. Is there's a spectrum to it. Okay? You know, I don't go overboard. Certainly not physically. You know, I keep in shape. I do the exercising. I think I believe that Men's Health magazine is for some reason going to do a piece on me. And I tried to make it clear to the person arranging it that, like, you know, I'm not ripped and, you know, I'm not really abiding by any specific protocol diet wise, other than the one that I've created for myself, you know, but I am fit. Is that going to be enough? I'd prefer no pictures with the shirt off. I don't really want to do any action shots, but look, I push it. I do my thing, man. You know, I mean, I go up that mountain. I was going up a lot more. I haven't been going up lately because since I broke my foot and passed out, and a slight fear, but not so much going up, going down. And for some reason, me and Gimme Dan, we choose to run down. And you don't want to compromise, you know, your pattern. You don't want to compromise your system. But again, you get old. You got to tweak the system. You got to make some compromises. But nonetheless, that's a hard hike. And I do it frequently enough to be used to it. But it's still fucking hard. So that's the limit. I don't need to necessarily push myself beyond the limits I'm comfortable with of just staying in shape. I've never been one of these guys that's had to achieve, you know, kind of personal monumental bests in the form of you know, doing something that no one else does, not jumping out of planes. You know, I'm not climbing Everest, which comes to my guest right now, my special guest. This guy, all right, look, we posted something on the Full Maron bonus feed last week, and we figured, you know, we'd share some of it with the whole audience today because it was, you know, it's a unique piece of conversation. If you don't know about the Friday show on the Full Maron, my producer, Brendan McDonald, and my board op and coworker from back in the day, Chris Lopresto, do a bonus show every week where they recap everything basically in the WTF orbit. Last week, they had a guest on, Darby Allin. Okay. He's an AEW wrestler and a pro skateboarder, and he also just got back from the top of Mount Everest. And look, I've never spoken with anyone who climbed Mount Everest before, so they had me come on to the Friday show and talk with Darby. Now, okay, a couple things. He'll be auctioning off some items from his climb to raise money for Tony Hawk's skateboard project. But he also has other reasons he wanted to make the climb, and he told us about them. So this was me on the Friday show last week talking with Darby Allin over video chat from his home, okay? And you'll hear Brendan here getting the introduction started.
Well, Darby, good to meet you. Glad you're here with us. I figured it was a great time to have you on with Mark because Mark is also a guy who climbs a lot of mountains. He climbs them figuratively. He climbs them literally. And I thought that you just came back from a mountain. And first of all, how are you? Are you doing fine now that you're back?
Yeah, no, fuck yeah. I'm surprisingly feeling great. I thought, you know, coming back, I was going to be all mangled and shit and it was going to be like snap back in. Cause in my outside of just wrestling, I skateboard all the time and I do all these other crazy stuff. So pretty much as soon as I got back, I was off to a plane to Bahamas to film Shark Week. So it was it's like a whole thing, but my body feels great. I feel mentally great. And that's the coolest thing is I've learned so much inside within myself on that mountain. There's so much stuff I can get into when it comes to the life lessons that I've learned on that mountain. Because a lot of people say it's not about summiting Mount Everest. It's about conquering like yourself and your inside and pulling stuff out. So
okay. All right. Well, I got some questions then. Let's start with the dead people. Now, how many dead people did you walk by?
I believe it was like a total of 8. But you know, wow. The crazy thing is when I went up, and then I instantly, when I did the summit, and I was coming back down, you see all these new dead bodies that you didn't see within the last 12 hours.
That just got there?
Yeah, like new ones that died within 12 hours. Yeah.
No, come on. Yeah. People just dropping dead up there like every day?
Oh, I don't know about every day, but it was literally, I went up when I did the summit, and then yeah. I was coming down, all of a sudden you see a new dead body that wasn't there on the trail 12 hours ago.
Different jacket?
it was pretty crazy because then you start thinking about your own situation, and obviously they don't go there with the death wish. They go there thinking, oh shit, like I'm gonna do this motherfucking mountain, and then it just doesn't work out, and it's just like you're like, oh my god, how are the Sherpas? They just like leave. It's just like a whole thing that
I don't know why they leave there, but maybe the guy's like, you know, I'm gonna climb this fucking mountain if it's the last thing I do. Right. And it turns out it was.
Yeah. There is a thing called summit fever where people just don't know when to turn around. And I felt that. I felt that 100% because when I was climbing summit day, we left camp 4 at 11 p.m. and I was going for the summit. And then out of fucking nowhere, there's this traffic jam. You hear these stories of traffic jams all the time.
Yeah.
But here, it was just a good weather day. So everybody wanted to almost summit like that day. And, you know, if you think about the grand scheme of people on Everest, only a little over 400 permits were issued this year. You know, people are like, oh, my God, everybody and their mom's doing fucking Everest. I'm like, that's not the case. 400 people in the whole fucking world doing this mountain. Only.
But like in general, do you just by judging by the way you live your life, do you know when to turn around?
No, not really, because I'll explain in detail about the whole psychology behind the way I live and why I live the way I live. But it's like the first thing when I was about to do this mountain, the guy asked me, are you willing to die on that mountain? And then you're like, yeah, absolutely. Because if you're not, don't even step foot on the mountain because you got loved ones. You got all this shit. Like my mom and my brother walked to base camp with me. Whoa. And I remember my brother and my mom, after it was time for them to leave and I'm staying there to get ready to do this mountain. And I remember them walking away and I'm like crying to myself thinking this is not going to be the last time I see them. And then I was like, I need to like be so strong and finish this mountain. And it just puts things in perspective where you're like, damn, man, I could see if I have, say, a family with like kids and stuff, I almost feel like I wouldn't be on that mountain because it's kind of a selfish thing to do. But at the same time, it becomes really real fast.
It's a high price to pay for recreation.
Yeah. but it's just such a spiritual journey and pulling stuff out of you. And like I said, when I got to the top of the mountain, I was crying. It was just such a overwhelming feeling of accomplishment, and it's like pulling something out of yourself. And but you know, you hear this, the traffic jams, it goes back to the traffic jams. Yeah. You hear all this stuff about the traffic jams, and then instantly we're climbing, and then all of a sudden everything just stops, and you're like, oh shit, what's going on? And then there's about a little over 100 people in this line, and you're not moving on the side of the mountain for an hour, over an hour. You're standing in the same spot. And I start to panic because I see all the Sherpas that I'm with. They're getting cold. They're smacking their hands together, stomping their feet. And I was like, oh shit, these guys. And I was like, what's going on? Like, oh, yeah, traffic jam. And I was like, damn. And then I was like, people are running out of their oxygen tanks. And some people are like turning back and just be like, yo, fuck this. And then I could see right there. I was like, how am I going to explain to anybody I didn't do Everest because of a traffic jam? Right, it's such a hard thing. You know, you kind of just hit the panic button. You're like, I felt 100% summit fever on that fucking mountain at that time. I was like, I'm going to fucking die on this mountain before I turn back. And it's a real thing. And
You mean summit fever is you got to get there, not like an actual physical sickness.
Yeah, it's a mental thing where you're thinking, oh, shit, man. I you know, so much goes into it, so much time, the money, just everything that goes into it. And you just, me, like in the sense of being like, you know, publicly saying, I'm climbing Mount Everest. So there's like these expectations that like, oh, this guy's going to fucking do this. And I was like, man, I got to do this. Because the year before I was supposed to climb, I broke my foot in a match a week before I was supposed to fly out.
I just don't get, like, if they only gave out 400, permits for the year, were all 400 on the mountain the same day you were?
No. So it's all spread out. People pick different summit days, and it's like, it's just like a weather window. But the day I was going, it felt like there was like 160 people going for the summit from Camp 4, which up there seems like a lot when it happens. But it was just... Yeah, it was really crazy just being up there, and you kind of, and I'm no mountain expert. I don't claim to be a mountain expert. I just claim to work really hard and dedicate myself quick and apply myself, and just seeing a lot of people up there that had no business of being up there. It's like, holy shit, this is crazy.
Like families with kids or something?
Well, just physically not being like, right. You know, and they're just getting pulled up. And in a lot of cultures, some cultures, it's like if you climb Mount Everest, you get a promotion in your job. And then, it's crazy because then some people go do it, but they can't summit. So they Photoshop themselves on top of the mountain to get the summit. And then they find out that it's fucking fake and they're firing this guy.
Stolen mountain valor.
And then I was just like, dude, I gotta summit this. I can't Photoshop myself on Everest. But it was, it was very, humbling, but it just comes from, you know, I don't know how, it just, there's a lot of moving parts of why I even wanted to start the fucking mountain in the first place.
But based on like, you know, like what you do for a living and how you've lived your life and sort of acknowledging that a lot of that, you know, comes from whatever damage you have in your childhood, were you able to let go of any of that going up there?
Yeah, well, it's also just letting this, proving to yourself that you're capable of anything. And I know that sounds generic, but honestly, we live in the world, in the professional wrestling world, the guy who runs the show controls how far you're going to make it or how low you're going to make it. So someone's in control of your destiny. Yeah. It's not like, say, boxing or, you know, mixed martial arts where I'm going to prove I'm the fucking best by knocking you out. It doesn't work like that in the world of wrestling. There's so much, you know, politicking and random shit that goes into it. And I wanted to just prove to myself I'm fucking capable of this because, you can't politic your way up that mountain. You can't, there's no helicopter that goes up that high where you can jump out and take a nice little photo on the summit and be like, yo, I climbed Everest and just lie to people. You got to fucking scratch and claw your way up that fucking shit. And then that's where it was so humbling to remind myself what I'm capable of, because you get into the world of wrestling. There's nothing else like the world of wrestling to me. It's like the most amazing job in the world for someone like myself, because it's like stunts, acting, it checks off all the boxes that I'm very passionate about. But on the flip side, like I said, someone else is in control of your destiny. Someone else is in control of how far you're going to make it, how low you're going to make it. Because you can have this passion, like, I'm the fucking man. It's like, well, no, you're not. You're going to be losing every week. And it's just like, And then, I don't know. It's just, dude, I see the world of wrestling and I love fucking wrestling, but it's kind of crazy how people get into this small bubble and then allows them to be chewed up and spit out. Cause all it is a 15-minute ride. Yeah. And then if you don't focus on your fucking real life, it's going to chew you up and spit you out and you're going to believe your own hype. And then next thing you know, you're being this character that you are on TV in real life. And it's like, dude, detach. I always wanted to be the person coming into the world of wrestling. I always wanted to leave the same person coming out. I didn't want to just all of a sudden get this ego and just all of a sudden believe in my own hype and like, oh, I'm fucking Darby Allin. It's like, shut the fuck up, dude. And there's like a bunch of like little parts in it. And to be able to do this mountain in the middle of what I feel is my physical peak, where I feel amazing, and Tony Khan, the owner of AEW, being like, yo, do this shit. It's like, cool. Because a lot of people in the world of wrestling, man, they just chew you up and spit you out and leave you with nothing. And the fact that he allowed me to do this is, I'm so grateful for it. And, you know, it's funny because we did so much just, I don't know, it started from an early age of trying to push myself out of my comfort zone. And the moment I started doing crazy shit is when I started breaking down these mental barriers in my head that were holding me back. And then next thing I know, like that was my ammo to keep moving forward. It's because no one's willing to go to the places I'm willing to go in wrestling physically. And I mean that. And I was like, yeah, nobody's, the more I do crazy shit, the more I feel and you know, anything's possible.
How does it feel when you get hurt? You like it?
Because dude, the thing is I do so much physical recovery. People don't know my physical recovery regimen and everything. There's so much that goes into that. So I feel great. Everyone's like, you're not going to be able to walk when you're 30. And I'm like, well, motherfucker, I'm 32 right now and I feel great. And, you know, but it's just like, just keeping updated with all that stuff.
Wait, so how do you rehab or what's your regimen for, you know, jumping off of a 20-foot ladder onto, glass?
You know, honestly, I feel like the years of skateboarding got me ready for that because nothing's harder than concrete, landing on concrete and doing all this shit. But it's like the physical recovery afterwards is just like a lot of like stretching, the ice baths. And then, like I said, it's like mental too. If you take care of your brain, your body just feels like nice and loose. People carry so much tension, you know, just being tense all the time and their body just breaks down from their minds being, you know.
So when you're falling from a ladder, you're pretty relaxed.
Dude, absolutely. And just, it goes back to the before I jump off the ladders or crazy shit, I'm like, I say to myself, I'm going to the hospital tonight. And it's just like, and it's like, so it's so, you're at peace. You got to be at peace with it. You got to be at peace with the worst to come, just like Everest. So you got to be at peace with it.
Did you fall at all on Everest? Did you go tumbling?
No. You're pretty strapped in to the safety rope at all times.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You're pretty safe. But that, you know, I've seen a lot of people get helicoptered out and shit like from Camp 3. And Camp 3 is a little over 23,000 feet. It was fucking gnarly. But you just have to stay like focused. And I remember being in that tent for, you know, like all day, just being like, you might die tonight or you might die tomorrow. And you're just like, you're constantly telling yourself.
But how do people die up there? What, hypothermia? What is it?
It can be anything. It could be anything. It could be like, sometimes people's bodies just give out. It's not so much hypothermia, I feel like, because they got so much new, equipment and staying warm and everything.
Yeah.
I just think it's pure exhaustion.
Well, you know, nothing about what you're saying makes me want to do it.
But Mark, that's the fun part. That's the fun part, is because the shit that no one else wants to touch is the places I'm willing to go. Because just like all those years ago when people told me I wasn't going to amount to shit, now it's like finding new things to keep accomplishing and pushing yourself constantly out of your comfort zone. But I just never wanted to try to appease people to the point where it was a detriment to my own, you know, growth as a human. And then, so this whole self-exploring with the Everest and everything, it was just very awesome. And then this is a funny story, because when I first started going to agree to do Everest, I was a single man. So I was like, oh, well, there's no freaking thing I have to worry about. You know, nobody has to. But then halfway through, I reconnect with this girl I had a crush on the school bus in high school.
In Seattle?
Yeah, I had a crush on her. And then we reconnected. And then all of a sudden we start dating. So it's a whole new level of like, oh, shit. Now if I die, I feel like.
Yeah, she'll be sad.
Yeah, but it's a crazy story because I had a crush on her in high school, and then she ended up getting shot in the head.
Wow.
What the fuck?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, she ended up getting shot in the head in high school, and I was like, oh my God, this crush of mine from the school bus got murdered. But she luckily survived.
How did she recover from getting shot in the head?
Yeah.
Oh, she became, that inspired her to become an ICU nurse.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
But fast forward, I'm on top of Everest on the summit, and I filmed this video where I proposed to her.
Aww.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah. So it was like, now we're engaged, but it's like a fun, like full circle moment. But I'm thinking the whole time now, I'm not just worrying about myself. I'm worrying about this future wife of mine and all this stuff. Like you gotta make it out alive, you know? And it adds such a level of, like, oh my God, like this, you can't be selfish anymore. You're, like I said, with my brother and my mom, like, dude, I got to survive for them. I got to survive for this, you know, fiance and all this stuff. It's a,
what are you going to do about this? I mean, I got to assume that because of the way you've lived your life, your whole life, that you're kind of, addicted to the thrill of it. Do you see that letting up at all?
No, absolutely not.
That's good.
I never want to lose that. That's never going to be lost on me because, yeah, I spent so many times in Seattle just staring at a wall and being like, yeah, there's a whole world out there. And the moment I get a taste of it, I'm never going to let up. And that's the, you know, I don't know, it's been a wild ride, but the beauty of it all is, like I said earlier, Tony Khan just being like, yo, dude, I want you to live your life outside of the ring and be happy. And that's the cool balance. That's something I can never take for granted.
And it's something Vince McMahon would never say.
Yeah. definitely not. And it's like, yeah, I feel, I just feel so free. And I told Tony before I left for Everest, I had a talk with him and I was like, hey man, I already feel like I'm the champion of the world. I don't need the championship belt per se to feel validated because I'm already winning in life. Mm. I feel so free and I feel so like happy. I was like, dude, I'm just grateful for everything.
Belt would be nice though, right?
That depends on, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I really don't give a shit. I'm going to be honest with you. It's just so much people are so concerned with winning this thing. But I just want to have good storylines.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to have good storylines. I'm not trying to be like, I need to be the top guy. I just want to have good shit.
Well, that's great. You got Shark Week coming up. There is All In Texas coming up. So your date card is full, but we appreciate you taking the time to come on here with us while we're in the process of wrapping up.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, it was great meeting you, man.
Yes, sir.
There you go. As you heard, Darby will be at the AEW All In pay-per-view this Saturday, July 12th. He'll be part of Discovery's Shark Week on Thursday, July 24th. The show Caught, Shark Strike Back. And he's raising money for Tony Hawk's skate park project to bring skate parks to neighborhoods that can't afford them. Okay? Visit skatepark.org to learn more. All right? Okay, here we go. Dustin Chafin is here. And again, Dustin and I go way back, but I don't think we've really talked for like 20 years. You can find his tour dates and watch his special at dustinchafin.com. This is me talking to my old pal, Dustin. Pull that mic up on your face.
Here we go.
You know how to do the podcast thing?
I've been on a few.
Yeah. I'm wondering. I look a little confused by the microphone situation.
I love it. The New York Hazen.
Is that what it is?
Oh, yeah. It's great.
I don't know. I think I've done it before New York.
Did you?
It's only certain people I can land it with.
Oh, yeah.
I think you've always been one of them. I don't know why. I just wanted to bust your balls constantly.
Oh, yeah. It's some of it I talk about in therapy still.
That's great. Wow. Do
That's
you?
That's great. Oh, yeah.
No. Well, there was more back then. You had a whole getup going.
Oh, yeah. That was the best. One time you said to me, you go, yeah, this outfit. It's like, you know, when you see somebody in L.A. and you just look at him and you go, that's sad. I think I burned those pants. Yeah.
Or were they like leather or snakeskin or something?
You know, it's whatever. You go with the girl that you're with, and they're always like, they try to dress you, and you're like,
so,
yeah.
So that was the situation?
Oh, yeah. That's always a situation.
Well, that shows a bit of lack of will.
It does.
On your part.
But, you know, yeah, I don't know.
But at that time, like, so you think it's been 20 years since I've seen you?
Like, had a conversation because we were I felt like we were you know, kind of close for a minute, and then we had a little falling out, and then I hadn't seen you in a long time.
Do you remember what the falling out was about?
Absolutely. Can we just get into it?
How long ago was that?
Well, I want to talk about when I first met you, though.
We'll
get to that later. Or do you want the falling out first?
No, I'm curious because maybe I can ease your mind.
Okay.
At the beginning.
Well,
am I the bad guy?
You're not not really.
All right.
I think it's kind of funny. I think I was dealing with it in the best situation. It was like I think I came at you in a comic way, and you needed me to come to you in a human way.
Oh.
And it was one of those situations.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because your second wife and
Mishna,
you know, she used to make us go to those one-woman shows she was doing.
Sure.
You know, she was, like, working them out.
Yeah, yeah.
So it'd be, like, six of us there.
Yeah.
And so I went to quite a few of them, you know, and it was always only, like, five or six of us.
Yeah.
And then when you guys were going through a divorce, I said, hey, man, I'm sorry you're going through this, but at least we don't have to go to those shows anymore. And you went off on me.
Really?
Yeah, and you're like, who the fuck are you with your cowboy hat? And you just like went off. And I was just like, dude, I really thought that was the best thing I could have said to
it
you.
It is, actually.
And it was just, I guess you were in a place.
Oh, you know why? Is because she left me.
Yeah. Okay.
So it wasn't like I was over anything.
Yeah, I got you.
Do you know,
still
like,
tender. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Like, you know, that's a pretty good line.
I thought so.
Yeah, well,
I thought I was going to crush with that.
Yeah. We didn't talk
for
years.
It was kind of over after
that. Well, you still had the cowboy hat.
It broke my heart. Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Broke my heart. It's okay. I stopped wearing the cowboy hat.
You know, well, that took time. You should have given me the heads up when you stopped, and I would have talked to you again. Sounds like it was mostly about the cowboy hat.
I don't know. You got a lot of heroes that wore cowboy hats, you know? That's the thing.
Do I?
Yeah.
Like who?
I don't know.
I didn't like it when Bill Hicks wore a cowboy hat. I didn't like
it.
It
was fun. That was perfect. That was like, that was part of the whole, like, Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yeah, I get it. But, you know, I barely like it. Well, he can wear it because he's got everything else going. Got a lot of Indian jewelry.
Of course.
Got the Stratocaster, and he can do something. I get it's a get up, but in comedy, it's like, do we need the hats?
I don't know. I think that's why we do comedy. So you can
wear the hat.
Do whatever you want.
Yeah, but you were doing a whole thing. You got boots. You were flipping your hands funny. You had a whole...
I was from Texas.
It's a whole package.
I was nervous, and I was from Texas.
You still have it?
Not as much.
Oh.
I've grown a lot.
Well, no,
I'm a better comic, but it was the early days.
But for me, it felt like he's working this hook, this weird tilt thing.
It comes and goes.
Now, see, like, you probably still do it, and I'm just beating you up again.
No, I just eyeballing that Zen because I got off him. But
yeah. Oh, why'd you get off him? Let me ask you.
Was it
making you tired?
No, I think it was just, I think when you go in for your insurance and stuff, if you have nicotine in your blood, like,
is that true?
I think so, yeah. That's what I was told.
Wait, so that you had to get a blood test for insurance?
Yeah.
Now I'm saying it like that.
If you have nicotine in your blood system or whatever, it's like a whole thing.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I had no idea. But I didn't know you had it. So you're trying to get new insurance.
It wasn't just that. I think I just, like, I go from one addiction to another. And I was just like, and I was just trying to tell myself, all right, I'm going to quit this right now. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like, I thought that too. You know, unfortunately, I thought like, well, these have got to be fucking with my gums. And then I went to the dentist and they're not.
Okay.
Well, because I thought they were causing my recession. And the dentist said, well, I've always had recession. He goes, no, your gums are actually more healthy than most people that come in here. because I floss them and everything. But they're receded. But I thought that I was just fucking, those are doing. But I don't, they can't be good for you.
Well, nicotine, I think, is, I don't know what that does. Nobody really knows what that does yet.
I'm sure they know.
What do you think it does?
Well, I think it constricts your blood vessels. I think there's a reason why you get the high or the low with it. You know, it's a complex drug. But I think if you're not smoking it, I think most of the damage from smoking comes from the heat and the other shit in there and tobacco, but like sort of non-tobacco nicotine. Yeah. I don't think it's good for your blood vessels, and I've heard that it's probably not great for your pancreas.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm trying to, you know, just, you know, keep well, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Just trying to stay well with the addiction, so I don't... So you're off everything?
Everything. 17 years Saturday.
But how long off the Zen?
Off the Zen about a year.
Yeah. So cigarettes?
Everything. I'm off of them.
And how long off of those?
Probably about 3 years. I went back, and that's when I got to the Zens. I was like, American, I love cigarettes, man. I love everything about it. I can't, every time I see somebody smoking, it's always like, you know, some raggedy person. It's like, what are you doing? But then I miss it.
I don't know if I miss it anymore because it's been a very long time since I smoked cigarettes every day. And then I go through cigars. Sometimes I go through like dip pouches. And the Zen seemed to be a nice medium. I was off of everything, like literally everything, for 3 years once, and it felt fine. But then eventually, it's sort of like what you know, fine isn't great. I need a little bump of something.
Well, caffeine and nicotine caffeine is the perfect combination.
I've gone off caffeine, too. I was off that,
really?
Too. That's, but then it's just like, it's kind of flat, you know? It's just sort of like, well, you know, like, it's good, I guess.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, when you're just chasing it all the time.
Yeah.
But so, I guess, like, I check in on you occasionally. I remember a few years ago, maybe it's been that long, I saw Nate, and I said, How's Dustin doing? He goes, I got him. Dang, he's all right. I got him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you need those guys sometimes. You know?
Certainly do, dude.
You need those guys.
You do.
But you know what? It's like, you know, when I ran the Boston Comedy Club, you know, towards the end there, I was the guy, you know, that was running that.
And he, in New York,
in New York, and he was one of my barkers. It was him and Pete Holmes and, like, you know.
So I was long gone?
You were doing other stuff. I loved watching what they tried to do with you.
Yeah.
That was always fun.
Which one was that?
Just all this stuff they tried to do.
Like what?
They tried to make you a host, like a talk show host.
Oh, yeah.
That was interesting. Yeah. Just watching, you know, all that happen.
So what year are we talking?
2004, maybe 2005,
really?
2006. That's when I was at Boston, I think.
Oh, so I was gone, though.
You
I mean, I was coming. I was
you were
coming
here,
back.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
You were doing stuff.
Well, I was back in New York in 2004, right? You know, for Air America. And then back again.
Right. That was fun to watch that, too.
You're saying fun like what a disaster?
Yeah, a little bit. But it's amazing. But look where you are. I mean, just like your failing is epic and amazing. And then it's like, because they didn't know what to do with you.
No one knew what to do with me. I didn't know what to do with me.
No, not at all.
Zero idea. But when did you, like, because like Nate, you know, when I kind of caught on to Nate before everyone else in Michigan, before he got anywhere, you know, he was like, I met you before, you know. But it was that room in Times Square, right?
Oh, Broadway, upstairs.
Yeah, that little fucking room.
Yeah, a little 80-seater.
And that was you running that.
Yeah.
And Chubby Nate.
Chubby Nate.
Sweaty
little,
Nate.
With the little glasses and the little bandy
Chubby,
hat.
Sweaty, drunky Nate. Who I didn't remember at all.
Poor joke, Nate. Yeah.
Poor joke.
A lot of us talked to you. It was first time I talked to you was amazing. I saw you at the New York Comedy Club. I was a busboy. I just started doing that.
Which one? The one on
23rd? On 24th. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That fucking dump?
Oh, yeah. It was just held together by duct tape and tears. It was awful.
But they had that George Foreman grill.
Oh, yeah. Well, I worked there. They didn't have that. They had a full kitchen. And I used to drop mozzarella sticks and French fries.
But it
couldn't
have been a very big kitchen.
It was pretty big.
Was it from another place?
Yeah. It used to be like a Thai restaurant or something before it was that.
And then there were like, eventually there were three rooms. One room seated four people.
What ended up happening is they couldn't move this stove out of the hallway, so they put up drywall. There right now, there's a stove in the path to the stage. There's a full on stove in there,
covered with drywall.
Yes, covered with drywall.
And there was that one bathroom with the sliding door.
Oh yeah.
So fucking disaster.
It was horrible, but it was electric, man.
All right, so you saw me there first.
It was CBGBs. It was the thing. It didn't matter.
Yeah, CBGBs. You know, for people that didn't necessarily have that much talent.
There was three guys. It was you. It was Todd, Barry, and Attell. And that was
we'd make the rounds there, but it was sort of like a B room.
Sure, of course.
Yeah, but now all rooms are arguably B rooms.
But you would work out there.
Sure. You know,
but
you
when
pick
I saw you
spot.
Come in, I remember you came in with your perfect 90s hair, your little leather jacket, and you were talking, and you were holding court, and you were talking about how you bombed in Australia.
Oh.
And I remember this being this thing, I never heard a comic talk like that. Like, I never heard anybody that vulnerable.
Made a career out of it. That's right.
but it was amazing because everybody was trying to be cool and like, hey, I crushed or whatever.
Oh, no,
you were the first guy I ever heard oh, it was terrible.
Sent me home.
They hated
me. They sent me home from a country.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. I was a week into a 4-week run and they're like, I don't think this is working out. I fucking bombed so hard. I had to fly back home and I relapsed on that flight.
Oh, wow.
That was brutal, dude. So that was memorable for you. You're like, this.
Well, you were just so honest and like, it was just great to hear that because I never heard any. I was brand new into comedy.
Yeah.
I never heard any. Everybody's always trying to flex and be a cool guy.
Yeah.
And you were just like, oh, man, it's horrible, dude. I grabbed the mic. I couldn't get anything going. Like, it was just so beautiful because I hadn't experienced you yet. So it was like this you know, beautiful manic thing happening. And I was like, okay, all right, this guy. And then ever since, I was following you and loved everything you did. I didn't care what kind of set it was.
Except for.
And I couldn't wait to bomb and tell people that I bombed. Like, I thought that was the coolest thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It was so punk rock.
Yeah. And that's why you and I are where we at.
Yeah.
That's why we've chosen the other path.
Yeah, well, you know.
No, but like, yeah, you like everything I do except for the things where they're trying to make me do things.
No, I love that. I love watching them
fail.
Force it. You did. I mean, when I say fail, my God, look at you, man. You're doing amazing.
Say it. Yeah.
But it's like, no, but it's like they never quite got it.
Yeah.
And I think you had to do stuff like this.
Yeah, I didn't quite get it to be myself.
Yeah.
So that was the journey. But so you were busting tables at New York.
Oh, yeah.
Was that your first job?
No, I mean, I guess.
I mean, when did you get to New York?
I went to Parsons in New York. I got there around 95 or 96.
You went to fucking art school?
Went to art school, man.
And you finished?
I did. I got a bachelor's.
Yeah. In what? What were you?
Well, in fine arts, but a fashion was what I wanted to do.
Oh,
I wanted to do
so
design.
Now, like, I'll let you off the hook with the hat and the boots. You're just
still weird fashion guy.
Yeah, you're just working on something.
Yeah, just trying to put it all together.
Fashion. So that was the dream?
I think so.
Were we going to design shit?
Yeah.
Mostly boots?
I wanted to be Karl Lagerfeld, man.
Oh, okay.
I wanted just the ponytail with the chicks. Like, I had no idea what it was.
Oh, so you were just in it for the women.
No, but I do love fashion.
That's interesting, though, but you didn't necessarily want a regular education. You were going to go to New York and be a fashion guy.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't that great at school, but I was good at drawing and stuff.
Yeah, where'd you come from?
Texas, Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Really?
Yeah, born in Kilgore, Texas.
Kilgore.
Trailer park town, yeah.
Were you in a trailer park?
When I was a kid, yeah.
So your family lived in a trailer park?
When I was a little kid, yeah.
Yeah?
Up until infant to like six.
The whole family?
Whole family, yeah.
Stayed together?
Yeah. My dad married my mom. She had two kids.
Yeah.
And then had me.
Yeah.
And then we...
You were the third kid of them.
I was the third kid of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
She had two different dads.
Oh, she was married before your dad?
Yeah, twice. Yeah.
So you got... Oh, so they're all separate
fathers?
They're all
half brothers. They're both half-brothers, yeah.
But they all have separate fathers?
Yes.
Oh, that's exciting. Do you still?
they had the double Christmases. I hated it.
It's like double presents.
Ugh.
You get along with those guys?
Nah. One, no. One, huh. One is dead to me. And then one just got sober. So I'm okay with him because, you know.
So everybody was fucked up?
Oh, yeah. Whole family's fucked up.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
What'd your dad do?
Well, he was a salesman. He sold like fire alarms. Like they used to be these big metal fire alarms back in the 70s.
Yeah,
I don't know if you remember those at all. Like he sold those.
Oh, yeah. They said fire on them.
Yeah. He sold them in the trailer park, and then he got a job selling cars, and we kind of moved out of the park.
It's a hustler.
Yeah, we ended up in Wichita Falls and
Kansas.
No, Texas, Wichita Falls, Texas.
Oh, okay.
It's about 200 miles from Dallas.
So you're real born in the blood Texan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why the cowboy hat. It's once you know all that, it makes more sense. I'm not defending it. I'm just saying it just makes more sense.
Yeah, but it wasn't, you weren't wearing it like you rode something. you weren't wearing it like you worked in the cowboy hat.
My high school had a rodeo team.
Were you on that?
No.
Look, dude, I'll be honest with you. I went to a camp when I was younger in Pecos, New Mexico, where you were required to have a cowboy hat because you were going to be riding horses.
Yeah, I've ridden horses.
So I've owned a couple of Stetsons, the straw ones, not the felt ones. Okay. And I've gone through periods with hats. I've bent them down like you did. You make the point on it so you can look like Willie.
Yeah.
You know,
I
yeah, I've done that. You know, but it's a long time ago. I wore out several different pairs of black cowboy boots. I'm not adverse to it.
I've seen your cowboy shirts. Yeah. I've seen your leather pants. Well, I went through that phase. Well,
the leather pants I still have. I'm going to get back to them.
It's a good time.
They never worked for me. And
they worked.
Not really.
You did them on a special, didn't you?
No, on Conan once.
Okay. I remember.
I never wore the leather pants on a special.
You did, what was that special you did where you you smelled Morrison's boot just to smell the magic or something? Remember that one?
Oh.
It was like a Hard Rock or something. You just smelled the boot to smell the magic.
I remember that joke.
Yeah, it was on a special? I think it was a Hard Rock that you went into, and then I grabbed the boot. Yeah.
I don't know if I did that on a special, but I did that first special at the Fillmore in 95, the half hour, but that was just black jeans, black shirt. Yeah. I didn't even wear the cowboy
boots. I think
you
improv something up top, and that was a big deal to us.
Oh, about the...
Mayor just improv
about
up top,
the venue.
Dude. Yeah.
Yeah,
just,
yeah.
Like, she just went off, dude. On a special.
I know. The dumbest thing I ever did. Anyway, half that special was I'm not going to prepare, man. Well, I'm glad somebody appreciated the completely irresponsible punk rock nature of whatever the fuck I was doing. Because I didn't see it as punk rock. I was just sort of like, I got to be in it, man.
No, I loved all that shit. It was great.
But so, wait, so your whole family was boozy?
Boozy. Well, my dad had a bar.
Oh.
The Chafin Downtown Lounge.
Oh, so he had a professional place to drink.
Oh, yeah. And it was basically a biker bar. It was like all the spider gang or whatever those gangs were there.
Yeah.
And so, but we were always there. I mean, we'd be playing pinball, Kiss pinball machine.
Sure.
And then just all this biker activities.
Yeah.
You know, just be sitting at a bar. You know.
Isn't anywhere there's more than one biker considered biker activity? Yeah. There's two of them. Something's going on.
They're playing cards. I don't know. It's getting rowdy.
Yeah. Something's going to go bad here. Uh-oh, here comes another guy with another jacket. That's going to end badly. Guy with a different jacket doesn't have a shot in this situation.
I'd just be drinking Shirley Temples at at the bar next to some dude that's probably facing manslaughter.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure. Just... Or on the run from something.
Oh, yeah. But it turned into a strip club.
Okay.
Because, the old lady just decided to just take her top off one night.
Oh, really? Your mom?
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
No, not my mom.
Oh.
But they call, the biker, they call old lady.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Right. I'm like, this is getting really interesting.
So then and it just became a strip club.
The biker chicks would take their shirts off everywhere.
Oh, I know. Yeah, but then you try to do like legit stripper club.
Okay.
Bring girls.
How'd that go?
It did okay. Mom shut it down after about a year. But
when she found out about it?
Yeah, they were kind of hiding it from her, I think.
Yeah, it was
kind of like what happens at the Chafin Downtown Lounge.
But I imagine that, the behavior, once it became a strip club biker bar, that your dad was getting into some pretty messy shit.
Oh, yeah. Just guns. A lot of guns
around
at the house. No, he died a couple years ago. Yeah,
sorry. Guns are around. I mean, I grew up in New Mexico and everyone's got a fucking gun. Yeah.
On the table, like this knife is, like a handgun would just be right there. I think
that's legal now.
Yeah, I would pick one. I remember I picked one up and just started running around the house, and there was it was a whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, but, yeah. Got in a little trouble?
A little bit.
Yeah.
A lot of trouble. Pulled a gun on my dad once.
You did?
Yeah.
With intent?
Yeah, he was smacking my mom.
Oh,
drunk.
Jesus Christ. So, and how'd that go? How'd that end up with you pulling a gun?
He stopped.
And did that stick though?
I think so. Yeah, it freaked him out.
How old were you?
12, maybe.
Ah.
Yeah. It's that age where you can, you know what's going on.
Yeah.
You know.
So
that anger's starting to sink in a little
and
bit.
And I think your mom probably was like, you know, you were probably her favorite after that, huh?
Oh, yeah.
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 Is she still around?
Yeah, she is.
What does she do?
She's a comic. No, she's assistant living.
Oh, yeah.
She's all right.
She's got her head.
Yeah, that she does have. Her legs, not so much.
Oh, well,
she has
that's
a hard
good.
Time walking, but she's got her wits. She's funny.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So that sounds pretty dramatic, dude. So when did you finally get out of the family situation?
I think, I met a Mormon girl in high school.
Well, that'll straighten you up.
Yeah.
For a little while. Good for you. Life preserver came out of nowhere.
Pretty much.
Yeah, so you're...
Because it's like the opposite world.
Yeah.
So it's like...
Opposite of what? It's its own world.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah.
No, I mean, I you know, just going to somebody's house and cops not being called and like people eating dinner and like talking to each other, like that was new to me.
No one's hitting your mom.
Yeah. I don't have to pull
no
a gun out.
On the table.
I can put my gun away, you know. I don't have to be like Mad Max,
But did they want you in? Did you get...
Yeah, I got in, man. I went in hard.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah. It was like...
full secret underpants and everything?
Oh, yeah, everything. Like, I was with her, you know, this cute little blonde from Utah. Mm. That's how they get you.
Yeah.
And then...
they send him out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this guy's prime. This guy's a mark. Look at him. He's all lost and angry. Doesn't like being at home. We'll take him.
Cowboy hat. Let's get him.
Yeah.
We broke up.
Yeah.
And then I think to get her back, I was like, I wanted to be a missionary. So I went all in with that.
I kind of think I knew this about you a little.
Yeah.
Because I think it was part of your backstory.
A little bit.
Once you got out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what'd you go to Utah?
Well, I went to the Provo Missionary Training Center.
Okay, so you meet the girl.
Meet the girl.
She's not going to fuck you.
We did. She felt bad, and that's why she broke up with me. Oh. Because she, you know, I made her a sinner, so she had nothing to do with me.
So is this at the beginning?
The beginning, yeah.
Oh,
I wasn't supposed to go on a mission. They let me go anyway.
So you lock in with this girl.
Yeah.
You don't have sex for a while.
We don't, but then we do.
But at that point, you already decided to do it?
No, this is after. We broke up, then I decided to do it.
And then she lost her shit, spiraled. Now she's got to go back to the church and get clean somehow.
Yeah. Then I got focused and said, I'll show you. I'll be super Mormon.
To get her back?
Kind of, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
You're young and stupid.
So you go to Provo's.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I get baptized. I got to get baptized first. So that happened.
I
wasn't Mormon yet.
So you got to get baptized in the Mormon faith.
So we broke up. I baptized. I became a Mormon. I did the whole thing. Then I went to Provo, Utah, Missionary Training Center. They teach you how to manipulate people, baptize people, all that stuff, and Spanish, because I went to Santiago, Chile.
None of this helped your stand-up? I think just the manipulating people thing would be an applicable skill.
Well, I'm here.
That's true. That's true. You kept pushing like out of nowhere. Hey, remember we were friends, kind of. And I'm like, yeah, I'll see what I can do. And then again, hey, what's up?
I knew better. I knew if I didn't hit you twice, I was going to get lost under, you know, Nick Kroll's cousin or something. So I did that and I went to...
What did they teach you?
Just... how to talk to people in public.
Okay. That's helpful.
How to knock on a door and be like... Hey.
Annoying?
Yeah, pretty much.
To wear the suit?
Yeah, to wear the suit.
Got the name tag.
Bicycle. Yeah. Here's a crazy story. Okay. So I do this thing, right? And I'm stateside waiting to go to Chile. And I get sick.
Yeah.
And I have a prostate problem. Hmm. This is all real. And I go to the doctor, and the doctor's like, okay, the only way you're going to get rid of this prostate problem is if you masturbate. And so, but missionaries aren't allowed to masturbate.
But you're not drinking coffee.
No, we can't do anything.
I know.
Yeah, but we can't.
That irritates the prostate sometimes.
Okay, oh, does it?
Yeah.
The coffee? No, no coffee.
So you were actually getting a prostate problem because of your commitment to Mormonism? You weren't jerking off?
Because I wasn't jerking off, pretty much, yeah. If you stop jerking off after you, I think it creates a thing. I mean, that's...
Especially if you're used to doing it like every day. It's almost like an addiction.
Just stop.
You're going to get withdrawal, get backed up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
So, yeah. So
said you gotta
I go to the doctor, and then, but missionary, we have a vow of celibacy, so we're not supposed to do any of that.
Yeah.
And so I go to the missionary president, and they
show
them
the prescription.
But that's not enough. They send it to Salt Lake, like wow. the equivalent of the
elders.
Pope.
The elders had a fucking
the elders' quorum.
Yeah,
yeah, in Salt the Salt Lake Temple.
Yeah,
and so they pray on it.
Oh wow,
it's a whole like 3 days.
You were the business for a couple of days. What are we gonna do with this guy that needs to jerk off?
It's so
they asked their 9 wives. We got to give him 3 women.
Yeah. And so that comes back.
Yeah.
And then they say that I can do it. It becomes a thing. And so, but 5,000 missionaries.
Was it a written permission kind of thing?
Pretty much.
Wow.
So out of 5,000 missionaries, I'm the only one that can like
jerk off. You're like a hero.
I am. Well, I'm like a Judas to most of them.
Oh, really?
Because they were like this freaking guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So that was part of my story.
Repressed hate. They're like, what's this doctor's name? It's like guys going to get heroin from guys who give out prescriptions.
Sorry, just doctor's orders, man.
Yeah. What's the name of the doctor?
All of a sudden, everybody's got a prostate problem.
Yeah, yeah. The guy that broke the Mormon church with the jerk off scripts.
Broke it.
So you're jerking off, you're feeling better.
I'm feeling better. Then I got to stop. I start to feel bad after a while.
Jerking off?
It gets better. I guess it passes, if you will.
Oh, okay, okay. So and then you locked back in.
I locked back in.
And you're going door to door
with
the Watchtower magazine. Oh, no, that's the Jehovah's.
That's Jehovah's. Yeah. So I'm in Chile. I'm in, Santiago.
Yeah.
And then I end up in Robinson Crusoe Island, which is like...
That's a real place?
Yeah, it's Isla Juan Fernandez. Mm-hmm. It's an island. Basically, it's like 250 miles off the coast of Chile.
Wow.
And so I was there with like 200 people. And
with 200 people who live there?
Who live there, yeah.
And you're the only Mormon in a suit.
Yeah, there's two of us, two Mormons. You always have to have a companion. So it's two of us and then...
Wow, and that was the job? You had 200. It seems like at least a finite number.
Oh,
you'll know when you're done.
Yeah. Well, everybody's Catholic. It's Chile.
Yeah, you know? No, I get it. So
there was like probably five Mormons on the whole thing.
And then, what, that you got? Or they were there?
I never got anybody there.
No, did you ever get anybody anywhere?
Yeah, I did. I got like 12.
Yeah, they still in?
Which is a big deal. I think a couple of them, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, so you...
I'm not, but they are.
And I know. So you get back from Chile. How long were you there for?
2 years.
Holy shit, dude. So like a whole other world in life.
Yeah, it's 2 years.
So you come back and I see they meet you at the airport with signs. Yay.
They didn't.
Oh, because my parents are
Mormons.
Huh? Well, but you're in the game.
Yeah, but my mom doesn't care.
Oh,
you know?
Like,
they don't.
Every time I go to Salt Lake, there's some sort of
That's what I was hoping for.
Long dress reception line.
Well, that's what I was hoping for.
Yeah.
It didn't happen. My mom like showed up late. It was like really, it's
your mom's
sad.
Mormon too?
No, not at all. They just kind of went with this whole thing.
They're like, at least not at the bar.
Yeah, at least he's not.
And you're not drinking or nothing?
Nothing.
So what happens with the woman?
I think she married a return missionary dude and like she has kids and stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So what?
Not that I look.
When do you lose your faith? Were you brought up Christian?
Yeah, kind of.
But not heavy.
Well, my parents would go back and forth.
Oh.
It was like they would get sober and then, you know, my dad would be broke, he would find God. You know, that was, I'd always tell about how much money we had, how many
times. Well, he had him, but he just reintroduced himself.
Yeah. But,
that's a popular thing in the Christian prayer. Hey, you remember me? I'm back.
Yeah, I mean, we had to burn our Kiss albums. Like, I mean,
you went that hard?
Oh, yeah. There was a church parking lot. I remember just like throwing
That was the church. What was it, Baptist?
Pentecostal? Something like that. Pentecostally, I think. They're speaking tongues, all that shit. Whatever.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is.
Sure. That's Pentecostal. I think it's Baptist.
And then
right?
We were allowed to, we could, Stryper was the only band we could listen to.
Stryper.
Yeah. Remember that band?
I do kind of.
Were they Christian? Christian rock band.
That's the one problem I have with the idea. Well, that's not true. There's many problems. But it's like the one problem I have with the idea of a Christian nation, just how bad everything's going to be.
Oh, yeah.
Like Christian jazz.
Oh, yeah.
Christian rock. Christian movies.
These are Christian
Christian
jazz.
Poetry.
There's no Christian jazz.
Christian novels. It's like take the fucking menace out of everything and make it just...
Oh, yeah. All the Christian actors are terrible.
Oh, it's just a... Cavizio used to be good.
What was it?
The guy who played Jesus in Mel's movie.
Oh, that guy. Yeah,
Mel's pretty good too, but they're crazy Catholics.
Yeah, that's a different energy though. That's not like that Bible Bell energy.
No, that's one of Nate's best bits. The varieties of Christian, just based on his family's commitment and his siblings.
Great.
It's great.
Yeah.
And I told him that I said, like, you know, no one has ever talked about it like that because there is. for most people, you know, if you're Jewish, you got a thing. You know, if you're, you know, a Muslim, you got a thing.
Yeah.
But Christians are just Christians.
Yeah.
And to explore the varieties of kind of born again Christians, you know, their commitment at the beginning and watching it diminish with each kid. It's very funny.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So, all right. So, anyway. I texted him. He didn't text me back. Am I on the outs? Am I bad?
He's making a movie right now.
Okay. I'll let him off the hook.
He's like, he's going to be the next Steve Martin. He's doing that thing.
Well, we'll see. You know, he's got to be able to act it. I mean, I think he probably can.
Another thing.
If they write it right for him.
I feel like now he's at a point.
Yeah.
They're going to do it. They know what to do with him and his delivery.
So, yeah.
With this SNL stuff. Like, they know where his strengths are.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's important for him.
They
still don't know what to do with him. They're just
to be Mark in those moments.
I'm glad he figured it out and we can have him over.
Well, he's got me, so that's all that matters.
but all right, so how does the Mormon thing end?
Finding comedy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you're in.
So I came to New York.
But did you?
I'm in art school.
Were you living in Utah?
No, I was. I went to BYU, Idaho, which was like a.
Wow, these are the worst places.
Oh yeah, at Rexburg, Idaho is where I was.
Brigham Young University in Idaho. I know they had a franchise.
Yeah, they do have a franchise
in Idaho.
It was called Ricks College before.
Okay.
It's like a Mormon community college. It's for people that can't get into BYU.
Wow.
And then you go from there and you get into BYU. But I ended up.
But you're believing, you're wearing underwear, doing the whole thing.
I mean, I was starting to slip a little. There were some moments with girls and stuff.
Oh, okay.
That was always
What is the process of sinning and redemption on a day-to-day basis with Mormonness? Like, so you do something, you jerk off, you fuck, and then the next day you're like, what I do, then what happens?
It's a big deal. It's like a court thing.
You got to own it in front of other people?
Yeah, it's a whole thing. It's not like Catholics where you can just be anonymous and just go in and be like, hey,
Or Christians, you can just do it at home.
Yeah.
You know?
Or a hotel.
Yeah.
But this is, so it's like a whole thing.
A hotel.
That's
where it happens. A lot of prayers in hotel rooms.
That's why there's the Bible in there. Huh?
You got to write that joke. Because that's where the sin happens.
Right? Boom. That is funny. I'm writing that down.
You got to write that down.
And if it's a Marriott, it's a Book of Mormon. So there you go. Do you know that? They own all the Marriotts?
Sure. Yeah. You're writing it down?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
You know, it's a workshop.
No, I think that's it's a great premise. Why they have them in there. Because that's where all the bad shit happens.
Yeah.
That's where all the bad decisions happen.
Oh, yeah. It's so true.
Yeah. Okay. So you hit, but do you remember the day where you lost your faith? Or is it a process?
Well, you know, New York was a pretty cool place to be Mormon because.
Oh, so you moved there as a Mormon to do comedy?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, to go to school. No, not comedy.
At Parsons.
School, Parsons.
As a Mormon. So you're still a Mormon.
So I was a Mormon Parsons.
You had Mormon guys there?
No, but the church in Manhattan was like all the Juilliard people. So it was like interesting, you know.
And the church let you go. You had to ask?
What, to let go?
To go to New York?
No.
Okay.
No, I mean, I transferred out of the. BYU, Idaho, to go to Parsons.
All right.
So I'm there, and I'm in, I'm a Mormon in Manhattan.
Okay.
And it's all like, basically kids that haven't come out yet, is basically what it is.
Yeah.
It's like all these, like, song and dance people that are coming to you. And in Utah, they're like, he's just like.
Is that part of the choir?
He's just focused, you know. But, so all that was happening. But I enjoyed it. It was cool. And then comedy was like. You know, the dirt bags and comedy.
Yeah.
And just, sure. And then in school.
As one of them, I know. Yeah.
Well, then the Amsterdam chicks and like,
About Amsterdam?
Well, there was like girls from Amsterdam, like my first year of college.
At Parsons?
Yeah. And I think that's probably what this.
What did it?
This girl from Amsterdam. Yeah.
She did.
Dutch girl, whatever. She was,
And
she
that
did
was...
it. It was done. I was like,
I'm for the Dutch girl.
I mean, come on. We've all been there. You were kind of there.
Yeah, for a while.
So
I didn't wear the hat though.
Yeah,
with the Dutch girl the hat.
Yeah, with leather pants though.
Oh yeah, I did try that.
Cowboy shirts.
That was me. Yeah. Cowboy shirts were always me.
Yeah,
that's
the word.
I don't know that I let girls really dress me. I guess Mishina had a little input because she was an ex-model and she knew.
Yeah,
but like no, I mean I wear five things, dude. I finally leveled off. I hired a stylist to just recently because I have stuff going up, TV stuff, and I always end up wearing the same shirt to the point where people are like, doesn't he have another shirt? So I know I'm on TV with the same fucking pants over and over again.
Yeah.
So I just bought a bunch of clothes. I thought like, well, these aren't really my style. And then you put them on and you're like, oh, there's a lot I don't know. I look pretty fucking good in this shit.
Yeah. It's good to have somebody dress.
So the Dutch girl, how long does that last?
Just, I don't know, like 6 months.
But you start doing comedy then?
Yeah. All that started happening about the same time.
Okay.
And then New York Comedy Club, all that stuff. Actually, I met you. I think I started kind of experimenting. I think I'd never smoked weed really.
Yeah.
And I smoked it with you first.
Really?
Time. Yeah.
Okay. You're welcome.
At Gotham.
You're welcome. Out in front of Gotham.
Yeah. And I was, I remember, because the beginning we would, we kind of hang out a little bit. Yeah, you were there all the time.
Yeah.
And so, I think you'd take me over to like the cellar or something. I'd be too paranoid to talk to people. I remember you yelling at me once. You're like, dude, you got to talk to people. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm just, and my girlfriend was there at the time. You're like, is it your girlfriend? Because your girlfriend's here. Is she bringing you down? She's making you clam up. And I'm like, ah. I was at the cellar just looking around, just trying to get accepted, and you're just like yelling at me. It was amazing. I love it. It was like you were all jacked up and you're just coming at me.
I'm probably still on blow.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I did a bump with you once.
Yeah, sure.
It was a good time.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I was there to help. I've tried to help a lot of people.
Well, I also got sober with you a little bit. Like, you helped me with that. So it's like a fun, like, went there and then went there. So it's a full experience with you.
That's right. Because I was definitely in and out of sobriety. When I was there, what year are we talking now?
To maybe around 2000?
Yeah, so that was
early 2000.
Okay, so that was probably... Earlier. So that was like, that's when I really got sober. So you missed the in and out thing with me. But I got sober for the last time in 99.
Okay.
And then, some Mishnah was around.
Yeah.
And I was, tried taking to meetings and shit?
Yeah. We went to meetings.
Yeah. I remember.
And stuff. Hung out after. That's why I would go to
Mishnah was probably, more involved with that than I was, I bet.
Oh, with me or?
Well, yeah, in the sense of like, he needs help. Let's take him to the thing.
Yeah.
Because you guys
were
sort of the same generation.
A little bit, yeah. And then Geraldo ended up kind of sponsoring me.
Which, really?
Yeah.
Wow. So did he relapse as your sponsor?
Yeah. He was, we both kind of relapsed.
Uh-huh. You know? Together?
Well,
that's some graduate level shit there kinda. If you're doing drugs with Geraldo.
Oh, yeah. Well, he would always like, he'd be like, hey, man, let's just go to the lake house and we'll just we'll write for 3 days and we'll just get to the, it was great. He would, it was so, you just wanted to be a part of it.
No, he's great. I really miss
that guy, man.
Yeah, he was great.
So funny.
And, I had no idea how deep he was. With the drugs. Like I'm not naive, but like some guys, I didn't hang out with him enough, but like he had a real battle with the fucking drugs. And I just had no idea.
Well, it wasn't happy at all. Like his wife, they didn't like each other. Like it was just the whole thing, man.
Yeah, but he was a drug addict.
Oh, yeah.
But like, I just like, I remember talking to him. He said one of the greatest things, like he helped me frame when I was getting divorced.
Yeah.
Because I'd gone back and I was, working through this divorce and I was paying the woman off because I took that second job at Air America so I could pay her off. And I was like complaining about it. And, I told him like she got me sober, but it was costing me like, a couple hundred grand to all in with the divorce. He goes, well, that's what I spent on 3 rehabs. I'm like, all right, okay, I'll frame it like that. I'm sober and that's what it cost me.
Yeah.
That's a good way to frame it. Yeah, he was a great, brilliant guy.
So funny. It was, to me, it was always you, him, and Stanhope. You guys were my three. You guys were my three, man.
Thank you. How's me, Geraldo, and Stanhope.
The most banged up dudes.
Yeah.
Ever met in my life.
You got no choice but to cut your own path with that bunch of heroes. You got to go get yourself a ranch.
I think I relapsed watching Stanhope once because it was like so electric, like an early drunk show.
Sure.
And it was like, oh. Phenomenal watching him just kind of pull and find it.
Oh, yeah.
It's so great. I still love him. I think he's just fantastic.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And I haven't talked to him in a while, but he checks in occasionally. Yeah. I like that he had to eventually tell the bartenders not to make it real booze because they kept sending him, kept sending him booze. And he's like, I can't do it. How's he doing?
I think he's good. He's touring now. Yeah, he's out there. I'm not real close with him, but he's touring. Yeah.
I should check in with him.
Yeah.
So So how does it go in New York? Because you're fucking really kind of hitting it, and you don't stay sober. So how fucked up are you?
It's bad. You know, it's like because I think my mom sent me some. My mom used to work for a doctor and stuff. Like she always had access to like prescription drugs.
Yeah.
And so we'd always like I would just get some sort of antidepressant or something that wasn't prescribed by anybody. It just was sent to me by my mom, and then I would drink whiskey on it. It's so there's like some pretty bad moments. Just Exfexer, I think, was my mom. I got drunk on that. Like it got a problem. But
you had mental problems?
Yeah. I had a really bad ex. I think you met her. She was terrible, man. Just an awful person.
I can't remember her.
Red hair.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Still, it was rough. She was around that time.
Wait, she worked at the Cellar?
She didn't work there. She didn't work at the Cellar.
I'm trying to remember her. But so what happens? How do you hit the wall?
Just kind of suicide, I think. I was like trying to sleeping pills and whatever, and ended up in St. Vincent's in the ER, pumped my stomach, all that stuff.
Really?
Yeah, it was rough, and then ended up in a psych ward. And next thing I woke up and I'm in this psych ward, man.
What?
In Manhattan. Yeah.
So you had the girl, you're trying to manage your mental problems. You were on, what kind of drugs were you on?
Everything, but whatever anybody gave me.
Oh, really?
It was kind of one of those things where the bag it in was like a fun.
Sure.
It was like you pull the gates down.
Yeah.
Who's there?
Yeah.
What dealer's there? Who's got what's in somebody's pocket? That's what I did. I never seeked out too much. I mean, sometimes I'd buy blow, but it wasn't like something, it was.
You didn't get involved with dope.
It was always around though.
Yeah.
No needles or anything. None of that.
Snorting that heroin?
Nah.
No, I didn't
smoke
do that.
A little crack. Once.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah,
whatever.
Kept it upbeat.
Kept it 90s. Yeah. I'm a retro guy. I buy vinyl.
Well, I'm an up guy. I'm not a down guy, except with these Zins. Well, a lot of people say they give them energy. Me, they just knock me down. The Zins knock me down.
You have a natural, intensity.
Exactly. They kind of counter that to the point where by 4 o'clock I need to fucking nap because I'm nauseous. Yeah. But
and we're not 20.
That's true. That's true. So you end up in a psych ward. How long were you in there for?
2 weeks.
What'd you learn?
First AA meeting was in there.
I remember there used to be a regular meeting in St. Vincent's.
Yeah.
Like downstairs, right?
That's where I was.
Yeah. Yeah, because you'd go to that meeting, there'd just be guys in hospital gowns.
Like, well, that's what I said. It's like, it's one thing to be like around crazy people on the subway. It's one thing to be around crazy people with an open gown. that's a whole other vulnerability,
sure.
man.
And they're in the room next to you.
Oh, yeah.
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 I remember that meeting. That was a good part of early sobriety is like, let's go to the meeting where these guys don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And some of them are they're barely dry.
Well, yeah, it'd be guys be like, I just stabbed a guy in the neck or whatever.
Yeah,
and then he'd get to me and I'd be like, I'm mad at my dad.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
It's just, it was rough, dude.
So,
and then I learned to get out of the psych ward, you got to do all the stuff. You got to go to the meetings.
Yeah.
You got to check in with the guys that were like, I ain't doing any of this.
Yeah.
Were the guys that stayed there. So I learned early.
Or frequent visitors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I learned if you wanted to get out, you had to just whatever activity, whatever.
Because it was a court order kind of thing? Because you tried to off yourself?
Yeah, they have to do it.
I think.
So they just, it was kind of one of those things.
Like, do you think you meant to kill yourself? You wanted to?
I think so. Mm. I think I was kind of done with the girl, done with life, done with comedy. I don't know. You couldn't. Just in a bad place.
Couldn't speak up.
Yeah, my dad and I, we had a rough patch.
I know that feeling though. Yeah. Like if you're a guy that wants to please people, by wearing hats and whatnot. The
stupid.
That if you have
that was my idea, man. Okay. Chicks dug it. You've never seen me with an unattractive woman because they love it. They're all into they want that character, man.
Okay. Okay. I understand the reason that you've moved through life, and then you got a bad one, and that sent you over the edge. I'm just saying that because I deal with myself is that if you have someone that you want that you're infatuated with or in love with or whatever you think or you're involved with even, it becomes hard to say I want out.
yeah.
to them. So you can just do it like a regular person and take the hit. It's easier sort of like, I want out. I'm going to end me.
Be dramatic.
Because I don't want to. Well, it's just like you don't. It's hard. You think you're going to hurt somebody. You think you're afraid of confrontation. You know, who the hell knows?
Yeah. I think my dad had a lot to do with it, too. We were having some like shady, like he had me take over his business. And like
in Texas?
Yeah.
So you went back to Texas?
He had a, no, I didn't go back, but he had a divorce.
Yeah.
And she was trying to take all his money and his company. And so
we had to put your name on shit?
Yep. We had the same middle name. And so it was like all that shit.
Did you lose money because of that?
I did. And he was like, the IRS, it was a bunch of owed money on it. It was like a shady, like, why would you put your son through that? Bad enough what you did to my mom, and you're going to do that.
And they stayed together?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, she married a doctor. That's what I was saying.
Oh, right, right, right.
Yeah, so she got out of
that. The one that she stole the medicine from. So, all right. So you get out of the psych ward. You're in AA.
Yeah. I think it starts to...
Well, what year was that?
Well, this... It didn't take. The AA didn't take in the psych ward. I just wanted to be out.
Yeah, yeah, I get it.
It took later. When I met you, it took, but it was... Yeah.
2001.
That's about the time it started to take. I relapsed after that.
Sure.
But, you know. But it, eventually it took 17 years.
Yeah, well, that's great. So, yeah. But so, like, but what's the process? When do you start earning the money as a comic? What, were you out there headlining?
I always ran clubs.
Yeah.
You know, that was part of it. And then I started kind of getting out there a little bit.
Yeah.
Just started making money and, you know.
Getting by.
Yeah, getting by.
Were you doing other jobs?
No.
No?
It's always comedy. I either ran a club or I was on the road.
Right.
It wasn't like I never, you know. I wasn't like, didn't put a name tag on or anything.
But I mean, what, but even, and stayed sober somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
But like what, were you ever like sort of, I, you know, I got to get something going.
I'm still, man, trying to get something going. That's why I'm doing this. Just open this. This is it. You're my Dick Cavett. Let's go. It's like, no, but comedy's always that, man.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. It's like now I'm at a place where I'm working with Nate. I'm doing cruises. What, you know, whatever.
Hold
man.
On, back yeah. up. So, all right. So you're out there. You're yeah. you're running clubs. You're
yeah.
you're making ends meet. You're still yeah. living in New York.
Sure,
but you weren't clean.
No,
as a
not
comic.
At all. No, not at all.
You know, and you know you had the jokes and the
yeah.
and the twitch and the yeah. thing.
It's like they had that Attell thing going.
Yeah,
jokes.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
We're all raised by Attell.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. There's a whole generation of Attells, and then so. At what point, like, when do you start doing boats? That's post Nate,
well,
right?
That's happening now, yeah. So, after Nate. Yeah.
So, okay, so you're, you know, but you and Nate are pals because you ran that room together. You met Nate in New York.
I took a chance on him, you know.
You put him on stage.
I put him on stage when he wasn't quite ready.
Yeah.
And he had to work through it, and it was...
So you were one of the only ones giving him stage time
I was,
at the beginning.
I was like the first guy, the first real... guy that knew all you guys.
Right.
And so that's how it was. He was able to get stage time
and work
meet,
it out.
Meet everybody, which is part of the thing. If you're not meeting the right
guys. How long
guys,
had he been in New York?
Just fresh. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Right there. And then he lived with me. So I say, I gave him stage time and I gave him a place to live. So
oh, you and Aronovich too.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like that movie Blindside. That's what I say. I'm Nate Sandra Bullock.
Interesting. Because I just talked to Aronovich.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys do this?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, because like, oddly.
He was talking about you. Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah.
He wanted to do this.
Because I helped him get sober.
Yeah.
Yeah. And.
Both of us.
Yeah. And, you know, and it was weird because there was one time where I'm like, I got like, and I don't get this because I'm not that active in meetings and stuff anymore, but I'm pretty sober and I talk to sober people, but like, I was kind of spinning and I'm like, all right, I'm just going to call Rich and, you know, do straight program call.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he did it.
That's great.
Yeah. And then he's on the podcast.
Whatever works, man.
That's for sure. No, I always like that guy, you know.
No, he's funny, man. He's like you know, it's like a trained performance guy.
But
like
he's a good guy. He's a good-hearted guy, you know. He's a Jew like me, and, you know, we're nuts in a certain way. But, you know, you guys, you got kids now, right?
No.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
So, but he's...
Two dogs, man. I'm a dog
guy. Good for you. Good for
you. Yeah, I win.
But you know, Rich has got kids, and I'm like, how's that going?
Yeah, right?
But he loves them, and he's a good dad.
Of course he loves them. Of course he's a good dad. It's not easy. It's not hard to be a good dad, I think, these days.
I guess. Yeah, but you know, there's a lot of shitty dads out there.
Still?
You know?
Is that happening?
Yeah. Of course it's happening. You know, half the country's Republican. You think that's because of good parenting?
They think they're good parents. They think they're making all the moves
for their
kids. But
what about their parents?
Oh, they're bad. Yeah, they're not good.
The Nate's just one of the good ones.
Yeah,
you know, because he's got that Jesus going. But so that's interesting. So you know, because Nate's a loyal guy. You know, like
I had to earn it. I had to
but
I'm just saying I had to figure it out.
But he knew your position in his life. He knew that you were the guy that got him on stage.
Yeah, but I was also, you know, I was working, I was getting stuff going, and I think he, you know, and I told him, and I had to convince him, you know.
So this is like, so when I saw him in Michigan, he hadn't broke yet, and then all of a sudden, you know, Fallon took him, and it all happened fairly quickly, and, you know, and but he's always been that guy.
Yeah.
Nate. Yeah. Queen, I mean, comedy-wise. Yes.
Yeah. Well, he has a lot. He has all those Legion of Skanks guys. Like, they're all his buddies and whatever. And
from New York.
Yeah.
He was always clean, right?
Yeah, but those guys didn't do the work to figure it out with him. So it's like he always had problems with some of those guys.
Yeah.
It's like they couldn't quite be clean. And so I just figured it out.
Yeah.
And it was tough. And it's not easy because I'm still dark.
No, but I just mean for him, for Nate, like, you know, his success, you know, he had it coming and he earned it. Mm-hmm. But it's just interesting that he was always clean.
Yeah.
Even back in New York, he was not.
No, even like a late show at Boston, he would be clean.
That's the amazing thing about it. That's why, like, I didn't notice him until Michigan, because when you operate at that pace and you don't have a second gear, you got to wait and hope it works.
Yeah.
Because you're not, you can't make any adjustments to that, right? You just got to wait till they come around. Todd was the same way. There are guys that operate at a certain
pace. But he found his gear, which is crowd work.
Right, but he also found his gear in doing stand-up, because when we started, it was hard to get laughs. Jeff Lifschultz, Jeff Ross, the same way, is you start out in a certain zone, and if you lock into it because that's who you are, then, you know, you hope for the best, and that happened with Nate. So when Nate starts breaking, and, you know, how do you get locked in with him over after all those years?
Just kind of reached out.
Yeah.
I knew he was doing those... you know, around COVID, and he was doing some, you know, starting to do some shows again.
Yeah.
And I just asked and said, hey, man, I'm working on a cleaner set.
Yeah.
I just did a, you know, the audition with AGT. I'm trying to do all this stuff. And I said, I can pull it off.
Yeah.
And we did, I think our first thing together was Off the Hook, the comedy club in Naples, Florida.
Yeah.
And I did all right. I was clean-ish.
So he wasn't a big act yet, but he was headlining.
He was about to be.
Yeah.
I think Tennessee Kid was pretty popular, Netflix special.
Yeah.
And so he was starting to get kind of, and then I think his podcast started to kind of reach people between that and Tennessee Kid.
Right.
And so it started to come up, and then, he just.
So he just had you open for him?
Yeah, it was just me. At that point, it was just me at the, you know, 25 minutes or whatever. And then it became more comics and became bigger, a bigger family.
He's like a caravan of clowns.
We like to call it an entourage, Mark.
Okay, sorry.
Or a festival.
Big caravan of clean clowns running around in a bus.
Yeah, a jet. Yeah. Let's keep that jet straight.
Yeah. 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 A jet full of...
jet full. I'll take it.
Non-partying clowns.
I don't care. Yeah.
It's all right.
I'll take it.
Oh, no,
it's a good time.
So it's you and Julian and...
a couple guys. A couple different... It's probably like eight guys.
That do it?
We rotate out.
Okay, so how many people are on an arena show?
Probably like... Julian's usually the MC.
Julian, and then, McCullough MCs, and then three, and then Nate.
Nate. And that's the show.
Uh-huh.
It's like 50 up top, and then he does the rest.
Okay.
Yeah.
He does it like 50 more?
Yeah, he does an hour.
Yeah.
He's working on our new one, so it's an hour.
Yeah. And
he's one of the few guys left. I mean, you're like that. There's certain guys that are purist, you know.
Keep doing the hours.
You do the hour.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I got one coming out in August for HBO.
Nice.
Yeah, it's all right. It's good. I'm happy with it. It looks great.
Excited.
Thank you. I think you'll like it. But it enabled you to sort of, I imagine, the responsibility of it is real. you know, to do those shows and to, to figure out how to do them and to do them clean.
I mean, to do 18,000 people, you know, is, I don't care who it's with, to be able to do that is, you know, pretty great.
Yeah.
And to feel that, to feel what, I mean, that's like Aerosmith. I mean, that doesn't even, comics aren't supposed to do that.
Yeah.
And so to be a part of that is pretty amazing.
Yeah. No, I bet you it's great.
And then it's like, we get to be a part of the hour. We get to add and tag and write and talk to him. And, you know, he's our buddy, but at the same time, we all get to, like, you know,
workshop shit.
We're always, you know, it's always that.
Yeah.
So I enjoy that those moments. You
where
know?
He's trying to work out a bit.
Yeah, we're all like, we're all in this together. You know?
Yeah, yeah,
so it's
yeah.
like he takes it from us and like we'll rework a bit and whatever. So it's great.
Oh, that's watch great.
One time he let me do his set list. Like I rearranged everything. And so it's stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. And did it work?
Almost. He had to tell a story. I think it didn't work. And he had to tell a story that he had told before. It was like a whole thing. But he did it wrong. He missed one of my marks. And so then he had to tell a story. Yeah. But it worked for the most part.
Yeah, yeah.
But whatever. I mean, he's cool like that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Whatever.
No, I love him.
Yeah.
So in terms of like, has that upped your visibility?
I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You do like, all right when you do Funny Bones and shit?
Yeah, I do okay. Yeah.
You're headlining?
Yeah. Headlining.
What are you doing, 50?
Sometimes more.
Okay.
Depends.
All clean now? Or that's just Nate? You got to be Nate clean. But when you go
depends to do... Depends on, like, okay. Like, because here's what I do. Like, if I know I'm doing, like, let's say Corpus Christi with Nate or something, it's a big arena show.
Yeah.
Then I'll try to get a date at the comedy club.
Right.
And so then when I'm in, when I'm on the Nate show,
yeah.
hey, I'm going to be at this comedy club. Mesquite Comedy Club or whatever.
You'll so say that gets as out you to leave like, the stage.
Or the MC says it.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, 10,000 people get to hear it.
And that works?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so then they'll come out and, you know, support me on, you know, 2 months later or whatever.
Right.
And if it's, the, if I do do that, then I'm clean. Because I know I'm getting that Nate's audience people, from Nate. And I don't want to, you know,
step lose on the Nate trust. Brand. Yeah.
Yeah. So I, you know, I feel like that's my responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
To keep it clean. Yeah. But if I'm just headlining and it's not from an Nate show, you know, it might come and go, but I'm trying to lean, you know, I'm trying to lean towards that, but I'm not, you know.
So,
not
but the you main did it, you got a new special?
I just did Dry Bar. Yeah. And then I'm recording something in December. So, kind of
what's that called?
Keeping Clean. It's like a kind of the idea of kind of staying clean, sobriety, and then also.
As a stand-up?
Be a clean comic, yeah.
And you haven't recorded that yet?
It's in December, yeah.
Oh,
I
great.
I just did a Dry Bar, and that
what
was
What is a Dry
fun.
Bar?
It's like a company that does like clean specials. So it's like, it's out of Utah.
Yeah. Back to Utah.
Actually, in Provo.
Yeah, how good.
It so went all the way
Full
back.
Circle.
Yeah, full circle.
Are they Mormon?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they got mad at me doing Mormon stuff, but whatever. It's a whole
they
thing.
They did?
Well, I went back. I did a gig in Jordan, Utah.
Yeah.
And I was very excited to do it. I was headlining. And I did that story with the jerking off and all that. I did all the Mormon stuff because I was like, if any of these people, you know, this is the crowd that's going to get it.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I do a crowd, they don't understand this Mormon journey at all. Yeah, and I got to explain it more.
And so it's and it's also, there's a lot of Jack Mormons there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I do Salt Lake all the time. I love it. I love Keith. Yeah. You know, Stubbs, great guy, great club.
Sure.
And most of the audience that comes, half of them are Jack Mormons.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But I think I rubbed it the wrong way because I mean, just.
You
it,
got reported?
I think so. I've been in trouble getting back, you know, so it's.
Like, oh, yeah.
But I did good. They
Someone went
out.
To the committee?
I think so.
To the court?
I think they did, man. What are you?
Hey, dude, it's a big deal. There's some Mormon sanctioned comics. I imagine Nate's Mormon sanctioned.
Oh,
because,
yeah,
because like, you know, Regan used to make, you know, almost all his money doing the arena because
well,
the
Nate's that guy now.
Yeah.
He's it's all the Delta
church
Skyline,
is okay.
whatever. Yeah.
Yeah
all those big arenas.
Wild.
Yeah.
I'm oddly fascinated with Salt Lake. I like going there.
It's beautiful.
Because the Mormons, for me, they're very pleasant people.
Yeah. You know? They're taught to love the Jews.
They are?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess they all see us as essential somehow.
Oh, yeah. You guys are the landing pad. You guys are taking care of that.
Yeah, well, it's touch and go right now.
Yeah, it's true.
Got a lot of push from the religious people to clean the landing pad, but, you know, there's problems persist.
Yeah.
Oof. I know. Well, how are they going to get us all there? Don't answer that. We're third down on the ICE raids. We got to get all the Jews to Israel. They need restocking.
We got to get them there.
Yeah. Well, that's all pretty exciting stuff, man. I'm glad you're doing all right.
Yeah, man. It's good. I like it out here, man. I like California.
How long you been here?
About 4 years.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's all right.
I live by Running Canyon. So
yeah,
I
go up there.
Yeah, I got the dog.
I went to a hike today.
Yeah.
Up over here. Yeah, Runyon's pretty nice.
I love it, yeah. It's just the lifestyle. I like it.
You don't go to the store or nothing, though?
Belly room, you know, working on it, hoping this might help.
So, you ready for the OR and shit?
Oh, yeah. I'm ready for anything. I'll follow anybody, man. Well, I'm ready.
I'll introduce you to Rose.
That'd be amazing, yeah.
Why don't you, tell her. I'll see if she's going to be around tonight. What are you doing tonight?
I'll make that.
Yeah, I got a spot in one of the rooms tonight.
Yeah.
I'll see if she's there, and I'll introduce you.
That'd be great.
But, you know, I don't know what her system is, though, you know?
I don't care. This is all, I mean, I appreciate that.
I don't know how much juice you doing this has, but it was nice talking to you. I'm glad you thought of it as an angle. But
it's not an angle. Well, first of all, I love you, and I hadn't talked to you, and so this is great. I do miss that goofy laugh and that energy, but this is a big deal. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to go, it's not. It's a big deal in my world.
Yeah.
It may not be a big deal, and it's not an angle.
Yeah,
it's just as much as you'd want to be on Tonight Show. You know what I mean? You're my Johnny Carson, man.
I hope it does something.
I don't care if it does, but okay. I'm just saying it's a big deal to be on it. It's an honor. Like, I love everything you've done.
Well, thank
you.
It's
great. It's fun.
And I'm glad we talked. I don't feel any distance.
No.
It's great. I knew
it would
be
fine. Let's go to a meeting.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. I'm going to make you go to a meeting. Let's go.
Okay.
I'd love to. There's a great one. I'll tell you about it.
What night?
Like, Wednesdays. There's a noon meeting that's great.
A noon one?
Yeah.
What, the comic one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go. I mean, Bobby's always like, come on.
Yeah.
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 I could probably use one.
Yeah.
Or maybe next week if I don't go to New Mexico.
You should, yeah.
All right, buddy. Good talking to you.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah. Wow. Good story, right? You can go to DustinChafin.com to check out his tour dates and watch his special. Hang out for a minute, will you? Okay, for Full Marin subscribers, we've got a special Friday show for you tomorrow. Chris and Brendan have an entire episode about, yes, seriously, Smokey and the Bandit.
If you don't know the plot of Smokey and the Bandit, you hear a very literal song about Bandit and how he is the great trucker of the South.
Yep.
And that's Jerry Reed singing the song.
Which, by the way, Bandit never drives a truck.
He doesn't drive a single truck. and when you first see Bandit, there are signs saying, King of all truckers, come meet the great Bandit, the truck driving world champion, it says on the sign.
I have a question. So, is he driving the truck around the world?
Does he go to the Le Mans and do with a semi truck?
Is he in China, like racing people?
On the wall?
Yeah. I want to know more about the world famous.
The world title of truck driving.
Yes, fascinating.
That's tomorrow for Full Marin subscribers. To get bonus episodes twice a week and every episode of WTF ad-free, sign up for the Full Marin. Go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. I'm doing a few covers lately. This one is one of my favorites. Boomer lives. Monkey and LaFonda, cat angels everywhere.